be on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Stephanie Casella.
And I am Alyssa Rosano. We have media and news.
From South Korea, we have K-pop news.
Are K-pop idols leading teens to luxury goods? Who are the brand ambassadors of K-pop? What are they selling?
From Ireland, did social media start a riot?
Did celebrity tweets fuel a violent street protest? Ex-Conor McGregor, is he a celebrity scapegoat for anti-immigrant violence?
From China, what are the gamers playing in China?
Can Chinese games compete with Japanese games? What are the most popular games in China today? Who are the most important game developers? Are they Chinese?
From Australia, is TikTok a security threat down under?
Why has Australia banned TikTok from government devices?
From Cuba, can the Cuba media report the news?
Is there an independent press in Cuba, or is the government still controlling the news?
All this and more coming up on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York, College at Old Westbury.
Our K-pop correspondent, Stephanie Casella, is here with an update on the latest in K-pop. Stephanie, are K-pop stars promoting luxury goods to their teen fans? Are these stars brand ambassadors to the teen market? Which brands are they promoting?
There are quite a few K-pop idols that have become brand ambassadors, such as Jimin from BTS, who's promoted Dior menswear. And there's also Jisoo from Blackpink, who's been on the cover of Vogue.
How are K-pop idols influencing teens to buy luxury items?
Teens are being influenced by K-pop idols to buy luxury items due to being encouraged to show off their wealth on social media. These young consumers see different K-pop idols endorsing goods from luxury brands on social media and YouTube. They want to spend a lot of money on these expensive items so they can become more popular by showing how much they can spend. K-pop idols are becoming luxury brand ambassadors for different luxury brands to target specifically teens on social media. According to the Korea Times, 2 days after appointing Jimin as its global ambassador, Dior's market price soared to an all-time high of 789 euros, which is $857. His two posts for Dior created $17 million in earned media value, EMV for short. This accounted for 54% of the brand's total EMV during Paris Men's Fashion Week, according to analytics firm Lefty. So, with just these two posts, Jimin made a lot of money for Dior and increased its media value with just a couple posts on social media. This allowed Dior to attract more attention from teenagers to purchase their expensive goods.
Why are K-pop idols becoming brand ambassadors to promote luxury goods?
Luxury brands are well aware that K-pop idols are big-time social media influencers, and they're using that to their advantage. These expensive fashion brands took a close look at how much the K-pop star's audience interacted with their content and their ability to effectively reach out to their fans. This allowed luxury brands to get an idea of the K-pop idol's popularity on different media platforms such as Instagram, Twitter, now known as X, and YouTube, in order to reach out to potential buyers of these luxury goods. These K-pop stars appeal to a global audience by becoming an inspiration for young people in regards to fashion. These K-pop idols are using their physical appearances that fans idolize so much to promote these luxury items. These young fans think of these idols as their role models because they want to be like them. The luxury brands want to use the power of the K-pop idols' fandoms to reach out to as many teens as possible to advertise their products.
How are Korean netizens reacting to K-pop idols' brand ambassador influence on children.
The Korean netizens have been bringing attention to some concerns they have about young K-pop idols representing these designer brands and their influence on children. According to Koreaboo, I just wish teens aren't appointed as ambassadors. Children follow celebrities so that when celebrities started using iPhones, the children started asking for iPhones. And it's one thing is the ambassador is a model, but I think it's unhealthy for minors to be models for luxury items. Some of them are worried about it not being healthy for the young idols who are minors themselves to represent designer brands. However, other people have expressed their concern about children being influenced to wear or own designer items. For New Media Beat, I'm Stephanie Casella. Back to you, Alyssa.
Thanks, Stephanie. China has a giant population and a huge online market. Millions of people play games online. Is it home to more gamers than anywhere else? Do these gamers play games made in China? Where are the most popular online games with Chinese players? And who makes those games? Ryan Gaydon has the news. Ryan, give us an introduction to online gaming in China. How many players are there in China? Are they playing the same games as we do here in the U.S.? What are the most popular games in China right now?
So in China, there's about an estimated total of 552.4 million players in China. Compared to the U.S., it's estimated about 212 million. China has a lot more restrictions on gaming and the types of games that they can play as opposed to the U.S. A lot of the games that they do play are known as, like, Honor of Kings, which is a sort of MOBA-style game, very similar to the U.S.'s equivalent of League of Legends. And another company known as NetEase puts out a game called Justice, which is a fantasy MMORPG. One of the newest companies out there, known as HoYoVerse, or miHoYo, they're one of the biggest and fastest-growing companies in the Chinese gaming industry, and they're the makers of Genshin Impact and Honkai Star Rail. HoYoVerse is a gaming company in China. They had a lot of major success over the years with their biggest game, known as Genshin Impact, which is an open-world game similar to the newest Legend of Zelda games, an open-world explore, do whatever quests you want. Genshin was easily one of the biggest games released by the company and was essentially its claim to fame. And just this year, HoYoVerse released another game, a game that broke records all across the board for them, known as Honkai Star Rail. And it's become one of the most popular and loved games of this year.
What is Honkai Star Rail?
So Honkai Star Rail is a game set in a science fantasy universe following the paths of deity-like beings known as eons. Honkai Star Rail is also somewhat similar to Genshin Impact in the sense of it's almost like an open-world game, but it has more turn-based RPG elements, more similar to older-style games. This is also known as a gachapon game, which is sort of like a gambling system in its own regard. Basically, there's a chance that you can get certain limited characters from the game using in-game currency or using real-life currency. This is where, like, a lot of the game gets its revenue from. There's been so many instances in the U.S. of just the U.S. alone, not the entire global release, where they've made millions of dollars on day one. As of right now, the record stands that they made $9 million in one day from a release of a certain character that was very hyped and very looked forward to.
Will this game help HoYoVerse take over the Chinese gaming market?
So a lot of the Chinese gaming market is currently based around mobile games, with two of the biggest companies being Tencent and NetEase, who developed games such as PUBG, PUBG Mobile, Dead by Daylight Mobile. And these games have both a big presence in the U.S. and in China, and they've made a lot of money over the course of years. HoYoVerse has already taken over NetEase in terms of revenue for at least gaming, because they have a lot of more stuff in other areas, but as far as gaming goes, they made a total with Honkai Star Rail of $1 billion from April to now, which is a very big record setting for them, whereas PUBG Mobile has made about $2 billion in revenue just this year alone. And also adding on the revenue from Genshin, that Hoyoverse also makes, that's a total of $3.7 billion added onto that. So $4.7 billion is what Hoyoverse has made alone, taking over the second biggest company of the gaming industry in China. For New Media Beat, I'm Ryan Geaton. Back to you, Alyssa.
Thank you, Ryan.
Let's talk about social media and violence in Dublin. Joelle McCoy has a report about the role of social media during recent anti-immigrant street protests in Ireland. There was a riot in Dublin following a violent crime. Joelle, can you describe the incident that led to the street violence? And why are these violent street protests a social media news story?
Sure, Stephanie. So there was a very unfortunate event that happened in Dublin. There was a violent stabbing that occurred outside of a school, in which the victims were 5 Irish citizens, and 3 of those victims were very young children. One of the victims was actually a 5-year-old girl that was reported to be in critical condition. The perpetrator was a 50-year-old Algerian male immigrant that has lived in Ireland for 20 years. He's currently under police custody.
What were McGregor's statements?
So the MMA star has posted many comments on X, probably known as Twitter, in which he criticized the Irish government policy on immigration and law and order, in which he stated, "Ireland, we are at war." In a later post, he said he does not condone the riots, but he does understand the frustrations, and he also stated that he does understand a move must be made to ensure the change we need is ushered in.
How has the recent tragedy affected the Irish citizens?
So, the riot itself was considered to be Ireland's worst civil disorder in decades. The rioters raided through Dublin city center, looting shops while also setting police cars and buses on fire. 34 people in total were captured and arrested by law enforcement. It was definitely, a very unfortunate event. The perpetrator himself was actually arrested earlier this year, back in May of 2023, where he actually had arrested for possession of a knife. And he was also arrested on other charges for damaging a car, and he was let go due to mental health.
What is the public opinion on Ireland's immigration policies?
So immigration policies have been a controversial topic in Ireland, in which many citizens believe that the rise in violence is caused by high immigration rates. Around 141,600 immigrants have entered the country between April 2022 and April 2023. According to government figures, these numbers have been the highest since the Irish economy was booming in the years before the 2008 financial crisis. There was also a 37% increase between crime in regards to theft and just any overall crime between 2022 and 2023 of this year. On one hand, though, the Irish government has stated that there has been no significant increase in crime statistics as a result of the increase in asylum seekers arriving in Ireland. The Department of Justice also said there is no evidence of a link between the number of asylum seekers in Ireland and an increase in crime. For New Media Beat, I'm Jalal McCoy. Back to you, Stephanie.
Thank you, Jalal.
Let's talk about media in Australia with Deborah Flammenbaum. Many nations are concerned that TikTok may be a security risk. What is the threat? Australia is taking action. Deborah, why is the Australia banning TikTok from government devices? Why are they banning the use of TikTok?
The Australian government is banning the use of TikTok since they fear that information from government computers, which is confidential, could end up in China because the TikTok app takes information from the technology that it is downloaded on, whether phone, tablet, or computer, and transfers that information to China.
How will the ban on TikTok affect people in Australia?
The ban on TikTok will affect people in Australia because government workers will not be able to watch TikTok while they are at work or have TikTok accounts about their work. They will be able to have personal ones. It also leads to less distractions since workers will be paying attention to work and not the latest video on TikTok.
How are politicians affected by TikTok?
Politicians are affected by TikTok since many people are upset about the ban, and many politicians are under fire for it because some people believe it is against the freedom of speech in Australia. Other people are worried about what the ban on TikTok could mean for other companies. And TikTok itself said in a statement that they're not happy with what's going on because it hurts their business and makes a claim that their security isn't working.
How will the ban on TikTok prevent information from being spread to another country?
The ban on information from TikTok will prevent information from being spread to another country since they're not going to be able to take information from a government-owned computer or piece of technology and transfer it to China because the app stores information from the computer it's logged onto.
How will other social media companies be affected by the ban on TikTok in Australia?
Other social media companies will be affected by the ban on TikTok in Australia because they're not going to be able to have an app there that'll work. Because other apps that use a similar information network to TikTok. So they're worried that they might be banned next and then lose business. For New Media Meet, I'm Deborah Flanbaum. Back to you.
Thank you, Deborah. Let's jump from Australia to Cuba. Cuba is still a one-party state with no press freedom. Anthony Bogorodowski has a report about the state of the media in Cuba today. Anthony, is the relationship between the government and the media changing? Where does Cuba rank on the RSF Press Freedom Index? What does Freedom House say about freedom of the press in Cuba? Is there an independent press according to Freedom House?
According to the Freedom House, Cuba's media landscape grapples with a complex interplay of restrictions, making the existence of a truly independent press challenging. The organization highlights that almost all traditional media in Cuba are state-controlled, with journalists facing harassment and detention for coverage deemed critical of authorities or the political system. While the country's independent press operates outside the law and faces challenges, its publications are considered enemy propaganda. According to Freedom House, the organization emphasizes the tight control over online access in Cuba. The most users limited to a closely monitored Cuban intranet. The constraints on press freedom persist, painting a picture of a media environment in which independence is constrained by legal, political, and practical challenges.
How does the crackdown on journalists in Cuba impact independent media and diversity of voices?
The crackdown on journalists in Cuba casts a shadow over independent media, significantly impacting the diversity of voices within the country, operating within a restrictive legal framework that curtails freedom of speech. Journalists face heightened risk, including arbitrary detention and harassment. This environment of fear stifles the ability of independent journalists to operate freely and constrains their capacity to contribute to a multifaceted media landscape. In Cuba, where traditional media outlets are predominantly state-controlled, the crackdown exacerbates the lack of diversity in perspectives. Threats and intimidation tactics make it more challenging for journalists to present alternative viewpoints or criticize the government without facing severe consequences. The control exerted by authorities over these outlets reinforces a singular narrative, limiting the range of voices and perspective accessible to the public. The repercussions of the crackdown extends beyond the immediate challenges faced by individual journalists. The broader impact is felt by the suppression of alternative viewpoints or criticize the government without facing severe consequences. The control exerted by authorities over these outlets reinforces a singular narrative, limiting the range of voices and perspectives accessible to the public. That repercussion of the crackdown extends beyond the immediate challenges faced by individual journalists. The broader impact is felt in the suppression of alternate and critical voices, hindering the emergence of a more diverse and vibrant press scene in Cuba. As independent journalists grapple with the increasing constraints of their work, the prospects of fostering a media environment that encourages a spectrum of opinions and perspectives beyond a pure constraint, contributing to a more homogenized information landscape.
How does the new criminal code affect journalists and foreign financing in Cuba?
The new criminal code implemented in Cuba brings about significant implications for journalists and their reliance on foreign financing. Under this legal framework, reporters receiving financial support from abroad face the prospect of severe penalties, including the potential of imprisonment for up to 10 years. This development introduces a chilling effect on journalism, placing constraints on the ability of journalists to access external funding and limiting their capacity to operate independently. The criminalization of foreign financing for journalists creates a precarious environment where the financial support vital for sustaining independent media outlets is now subject to legal scrutiny. journalists navigating the landscape must contend with the threat of legal repercussions, potentially curtailing their ability to produce critical and independent journalists. The new legal provisions not only hinder the financial sustainability of independent journalism in Cuba, but also contribute to a broader atmosphere of restrictions on freedom of press. The criminal code's impact extends beyond individual journalism to the media organizations relying on the foreign funding of their operations, creating a climate where the very existence of independent journalism is under threat. As Cuba grapples with these legal challenges, the prospects of a diverse and free press becomes increasingly precarious.
How do economic factors influence the decisions and content of Cuba's emerging independent journalists?
Economic factors exert a significant influence on the decisions and content produced by Cuba's emerging independent journalism. In a context where traditional media outlets are predominantly state-controlled and offer minimal financial incentives, the economic landscape plays a pivotal role in shaping the trajectory of journalism opting for independent avenues. The stark disparity in salaries between state-controlled media and independent outlets become a driving force for journalism to choose the latter, with the maximum salary for a journalist at state-run Gamma equivalent to a mere $23 a month, independent outlets offering $200 a month become an effective option. This economic dynamic not only dictates career choices, but also enables journalists greater freedom to select their topics and coverage approaches. The pursuit of economic sustainability influences the content itself, as journalists navigate the delicate balance of meeting financial needs and addressing critical issues. While economic pressures may necessitate caution in navigating certain topics due to potential repercussions, the financial support from independent outlets allows for a more diverse and critical approach and is important. The economic factor thus becomes a determining factor in fostering a generation of independent journalists, who, driven by financial realities, are instrumental in broadening the scope of narratives and perspectives in Cuba's media landscape. For New Media B, I'm Anthony Bogardovsky. Back to you, Alyssa.
Thank you, Anthony. That's all for this week.
Thanks for listening to New Media Beats. Thanks to our co-producers, Demetra Kilton and Cody Werner. Our engineer is Demetra Kilton. My co-host is Alyssa Rosano. Thanks, Alyssa.
Thanks, Stephanie. Today we heard reports from Deborah Flammenbaum, Anthony Bogardowski, Stephanie Casella, Jalal McCoy, and Ryan Gaten.
New Media Beat is brought to you by OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York, College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts at newmediabeat.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's at OWWRGMN.